I'm going to call us informally to order because we don't quite have a quorum yet. We're just waiting on, I guess, one more person.
You're still formally at order.
Right, right. So there you go. Public comment? I don't see any public commenters. Are there any that have come forward through mystical ways? No? Okay. Then if there's any dissent on approving the agenda, or can we do so by unanimous consent? Seeing no dissent. Past meeting minutes, we'll vote on this later on when we do have a quorum. Do take a look at those if you haven't already. We've got a lot on the agenda tonight, so I'm just going to go straight to our Metro Fare policy discussion. Mark Schofield, welcome. Yeah, we'll just get you there because you have a mic.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all for the opportunity to come here. My name is Mark Schofield. I'm the Senior Economic and Financial Advisor for the Office of Management and Budget Services for Metro. That doesn't really tell you a whole lot about exactly what I do. I am in charge of ridership forecasting, revenue forecasting, fare policy analysis, the allocation of the subsidy to the jurisdictions, and then a lot of other sort of ad hoc things that come up. I've been with Metro for a little over a year now. I previously worked for a design planning engineering firm that did a lot of financial consulting and ridership forecasting for transit agencies and MPOs. And just as a personal note, I grew up in the Washington region out in Fairfax County, moved away for a while, but have lived here now for about 10 years since I came back. And I live down in Alexandria, so I'm a Yellow Line rider. So what I want to talk a little bit about is what our budget process is and then where the fare policy stuff fits into that. We're ramping up right now for our 2015 budget development process. It may sound strange to say that since it's only October 2013, but our fiscal year runs July to June, and so we're already one quarter of the way into FY14, and so we're now in the process of getting ready for the FY15 budget. Metro staff is going to present to the Finance Committee of the Board later this month sort of a preview of the FY15 budget. None of it is locked down. It's all sort of advisory at this point. Just a general picture of where we're headed in terms of the operating budget and the capital budget. We expect that the board will give us a lot of feedback as a part of that presentation, and we will go back and incorporate that, and then the general manager will actually propose his budget at the November committee meeting, the November meeting of the Finance Committee. Then the process after that is there's an extensive amount of public outreach that goes on during the late fall and the winter about all the aspects of the proposed budget, and then the actual budget will be adopted sometime in the spring, March or April. Sometimes that adopted budget looks almost identical to the proposed budget. That's what happened in FY14. There was very little change between what the general manager proposed and what the board adopted. In previous years, though, there have been lots of changes between the two as a result of that public outreach process and just making sure that what the general manager is proposing that we're going to do matches up with what the board at a policy level wants to do. So this preview that we'll have for the committee in October will include a discussion of fare policy. So the board's policy is to review fares every 2 years. This doesn't commit the board to doing anything specific. But I think the two-year review is good policy. I think when you only review fares on a sort of an ad hoc basis, I think it's very easy to go along and suddenly you've gone 5 years and you haven't raised fares, and then there's a lot of pressure to do a very large fare increase all at once to sort of catch you back up. I think that sort of every 2 year sort of discipline from a policy perspective is a good thing that the board has instituted. So the last time that Metro raised fares was in July of 2012, which was the beginning of our fiscal 13. And so now that we're building up to fiscal 15, we're at that time again to look at the fares. So John had, if you could put up the fare policy principles. So the board, back in November of 2010, adopted these principles that should guide the fare policy for the authority. The board members have changed some since then, but I think in general, all the members would still sort of generally agree with what's up here. And so I just wanted to run through these briefly and just tell you how they sort of impact our thinking about how this, how to think about fares. The first one, which is to ensure and enhance customer satisfaction. That's really broad. That could cover a whole lot of things. In terms of specifics, I don't know that that gives us a whole lot to go on, but it's sort of an overarching principle, you know, to keep in mind. The second one, which is to establish a mechanism to allow customers to determine their fares easily. That really means, you know, simplification, either simplification of the fares themselves or simplification of the displays, and when somebody who maybe is a new user to the system is coming in, that they should be able to relatively quickly determine what their fare is. The third one is to optimize the use of existing capacity, and I think that translates into, where possible, try to encourage ridership in the off-peak, try to encourage reverse commute ridership. Wherever we have capacity that's out there that is not, you know, completely being used, if there are things we can do on the fare side to encourage people to ride in those times and at those places, that's something that we should do. The fourth one is to establish equitable fares and ensure compliance with federal regulations. That really means Title VI compliance. You know, whenever we do a service change, whenever we do a fare change, we have to do an analysis that ensures that the burden or the impact of that change is not being felt disproportionately, you know, by certain communities, and that's something that the board is committed to and something that we as the staff are committed to. The fifth one is to facilitate movement between modes and operators throughout the region. I think that to us just means where you can encourage transfers, and then just in general encourage sort of the universal adoption of the smart trip so that people can move between different operators, not just Metro, easily. That's something that has largely, you know, taken place. And then the last one is sort of the hardest of all, which is to generate adequate revenue while maximizing ridership. And that's really, that's the challenge that we face all the time. You know, whenever we consider a fare increase, is it, or whenever we have an increase in the difference between revenues and expenses, is that difference going to be borne by the jurisdictions and the taxpayers, or is that difference going to be borne by, you know, the riders? And it's, depending on the situation, the answer can be different from year to year. And so we try to get feedback from the board, feedback from the jurisdictions, feedback from the riders, and try to come to sort of, you know, to sort of a balance there. I think, just to put, you know, some context for you, our current fare box recovery, so the you know, the percentage of our expenses that are covered by fares, is about 53%. So that's transit fares and parking. If you include advertising and some of the non-transit things that we do, that increases to 56%. It varies quite a bit by mode, though, of course. The fare box recovery for rail is about 80%. For bus, it's about 25%. And for access, it's less than 10%. So you're sort of within each of the different modes, you have sort of different policy objectives, you have different cost structures, and that's why you see that kind of variation. So thinking about FY15 and what's sort of the context that we see ourselves in, two points. Given the comments that we've heard from the board so far and the discussions that we've had with their staff representatives, it doesn't appear that there's going to be any major changes proposed for FY15. And by that I mean, prior to the last fare increase, the one in fiscal 2013, staff prepared a volume of information for the board about flat fares and zone fares and, you know, things that would be very, very different from our current sort of time and distance-based fares on rail. At the moment, there doesn't appear to be a desire for that at this point. I would say, though, you know, we have this new, the new electronic fare payment system that's on the horizon in the next few years, you know, that's under procurement right now. I think once we're closer to that, I would imagine, and I'm just speaking for myself here, but I would imagine that the board will ask us to look at some more big change kind of options because of the flexibility that the new fare payment system will provide us. But at the moment, we're not getting any feedback from the board that that's a direction to head right now. And the other point is, I certainly understand that, you know, that there's a desire among some riders for more and different and better pass products on rail. And I personally am sympathetic to that view as well. I think that desire is a facet of sort of a bigger change that we've seen in the metro system over the last probably 10 or 15 years. You know, the system was originally designed to serve sort of a commute market, the federal employees and other folks sort of coming into downtown DC, and then sort of a lower income transit dependent market, and then the visitors who would come to the district. And especially that commute market, it sort of operated not unlike a commuter rail sort of market, you know, people coming in from a longer distance away, sort of coming into a downtown core. I think over the last, you know, again, 10 or 15 years, we've seen the emergence of a different kind of market, sort of a fourth kind of market that is more like a subway market. You know, people who are in the Roslyn-Ballston corridor, people who are along the Green Line, other parts of the region. And these are choice riders who are using the rail system, but they're using it in conjunction with the bus system. They're using it in conjunction with, you know, car sharing and bikes and taxis and a whole different, you know, whatever the best mode for that particular trip is, they're going to use it. And, you know, we certainly have seen, for example, on 14th Street and 16th Street, a big increase in our bus ridership that, you know, wasn't there 5 years ago. And so I think given our current sort of time and distance fare structure and given that from a financial perspective, we still are pretty dependent on that traditional commute market, it's challenging to make changes to passes and to pricing overall that sort of are aimed at that newer market without eating into how much we depend financially on the traditional commute market. And so I just say that to let you know that we certainly are trying to make better pass products, make more attractive pass products. It's just really challenging. So I'll just leave it at that. And so with that, what I'm here for is to answer questions, if you have them, sort of, if you have questions about sort of the history or where we are now in terms of ridership and fare policy, I can try to answer them now, or if I can't, I can work with you and with John, you know, to get the answers and then have them come back to the council. And also to hear your opinions or ideas about what we should be thinking about for fares in FY15. As I said, this is a long process and we're only at the beginning of it. You know, there's a chance for feedback now. The board is going to be giving us feedback later this month. And then even after the general manager proposes, there's a long period of sort of public outreach, public comment. The one thing that I can't do is sort of speculate about sort of details of the board's policy. So with that, I'd be happy to.
All right. Well, thanks very much for coming, first of all.
Yeah, sure.
Really appreciate you. And I think we have a lot of questions that, you know, that I've heard at least throughout the year that squarely fall into your portfolio.
Okay.
So I think it's great that you're here to answer some of those questions. I mean, obviously, our main question would probably be, will you suggest an increase in fares? But since you probably can't answer that, I'll ask it a different way. In your office, how do you sort of differentiate between or sort of gauge the portion of any fare increase that you would pass on to customers versus the fare increase that you'd pass on to the jurisdictions? How do you sort of weigh those two formulas?
Well, that's hard to say. The board, as in addition to asking, in addition to reviewing fares every 2 years, the board has said that the consumer price index should be sort of a benchmark for fare increases. And so, not that if fares were to change that they would be committed to that, but that use that to sort of see where fares are going. If it's going to be different than that, there needs to be sort of a compelling reason, I think. Some of it also, I think, depends on what the financial situation in the jurisdictions is. When the economy is doing well and the jurisdictions feel like they can support more, then I think in some cases they might be willing to shoulder more of the burden rather than to put it on the riders. Versus if they're feeling very constrained, then the decision could go the other way. Again, I don't think there really is no rule. It's very much sort of context dependent, I think. I'm sorry, I can't give you a stronger answer.
No, that's a very helpful answer, actually. And I'll leave plenty of time for my colleagues here to comment as well. But I just want to encourage you to use us as your proxies. I mean, if it's between asking riders for a fare increase and asking the jurisdictions to increase their percentage of the pie, I just hope that you would use us as ways to go to the jurisdictions and try and convince them to do that. Because I think a lot of the time, I think the assumption is that the jurisdictions are always going to sort of plead poverty and will not have the money available. But you know, when you do go to the jurisdictions rather than riders, that takes the pool of money and expands it to all of the people who benefit from Metro, not just riders.
And I think just to expand on that a little more, when there's a gap and you're looking at, are we potentially going to raise fares? Are we going to ask the jurisdictions to contribute more? There is, of course, also the third piece, which is for us as the staff to find cost efficiencies. So what you would hope is to find a balance between all three of those, and what you don't want to get to is the fourth option, which is to cut service. You would hope that among those three options you can find something that maybe makes everybody sort of equally unhappy and not have to get to the fourth one, which is absolutely the way that we don't want to go.
Yeah. All right, let's just go around real quick. Maybe we'll start down there with Karen.
Hey, I have like maybe two questions and a comment.
Okay. You just turn on your mics.
Oh, sorry. So I have two questions and a comment. So my first question has to do with an annoying thing that Metro does with the smart card.
Okay.
So if you happen to go on vacation for 3 weeks, the money disappears off the smart card. And it's like really a hassle to get it put back on. Is there anything that can be done about that? You don't have to answer, but that's a problem.
Okay, why don't we put that on the list, and we can talk to Trez. And
But it is really annoying, and not that I ever go on vacation for 3 weeks, but I know someone that did, and they've complained to me a lot. But my other question is, so like, one of the things I've noticed is that when Metro is looking at fare structure, it seems to me they've left a lot of money on the table with their parking fees. And perhaps a little more study ought to go to making, if you want to optimize use of peak times, parking fee structure isn't working. And you might want to take a look at that.
I think parking is more interesting than I originally thought it was when I first came here. I sort of hadn't really paid much attention to it. We really do have a lot very, we have some lots that are at 120% utilization, and we have some lots that are at less than 50% utilization.
Where are those?
And so, Wheaton, for example, is one that has relatively low utilization. But we certainly are looking at ways that we could try to use those assets more effectively. I know from discussions with the jurisdictions, Fairfax and Montgomery and Prince George's certainly feel, they always will sort of push back against parking charge increases. It's always sort of a balance for them because they feel, you know, that most of their stations have parking and their riders tend to be the ones who have to pay both a parking fee and then, you know, the rail fare. So it's always, again, it's, as I've been saying, it's always sort of a balancing act between riders who have different needs and live in different places.
But if you have a lot that you can never park after 7:30 in the morning, that tells you that your fares are way too low. Because that means nobody can come at 9 in the morning on their car and get on the metro.
I think I agree. And I think, look, I think we are going to be looking at ways to try to get the utilization a little more evened out.
Maria?
I guess that actually leads me to a question I didn't know I had.
Okay.
I live in Silver Spring, and there are a lot of parking garages around, but none of them are metro garages. They're all private, as far as I know. And what does that do or not do around, you know, you're looking at things, or does it even make a difference? And the reason I'm remembering it this way is with the feds and others giving money on smart cards,
yes,
people in Silver Spring couldn't do a parking option because they were private lots.
I don't know the answer to that specifically. I would be happy to talk to Patrick in parking.
I don't know if it's important, but it's something, a quirk in the system, I guess.
Okay.
A second thing, which again may be a quirk, when I went to one of the bus hearings a week or so ago,
sure.
I believe it was somebody from Laurel in trying to deal with buses that have short hours and then connecting with local buses. One of the things where you're trying to streamline systems. And they happen to be in one of the systems where this compatibility hasn't happened, where, number one, they're really short hours that don't match. And people that change don't get transfers. They have to pay again. And I wonder, how do you try to manage the outliers that remain? Any sense?
Do you know what the system was that they were trying to connect to? Was it somewhere up in Howard County or something like that?
It may. Do you remember the person? I will
okay.
Look it up.
Okay. Yeah, it, please. And we'll. We can try to follow up on.
Thanks.
I most likely missed this, but did you all discuss like a potential increase in fare for the bus? Is that something that's on the table, or is that, because I know I've heard rumblings about it. I don't know if that's part of the discussion or.
I'm trying to give just some context, and we'll be sort of giving a preview to the Finance Committee next week,
okay.
But even that is not a final thing. We expect some feedback from the board to ask us potentially to look at different things.
But I don't know if you were here when we talked about timeline. We're talking about mid next year.
Oh, okay. Like most other things, like
it's
the change.
It's the biannual.
Yeah, it's on the schedule.
Okay. So that's not something.
Oh, you were talking like a near term, like.
Like yeah, like even mid next year, if that's a potential.
It is.
Well, if generally, if the board, you know, decides that a fair change is what they want to do, it would almost certainly be July of next year, because that's the beginning of our next fiscal year.
And is there any indication of like how much of an increase it would be or anything like that? No, not at this time.
Sorry.
Okay. Just wondering. I think that was my.
We tried
question.
To weasel that out of it, but it didn't work. Carol?
Yeah, I have a question, and Patrick would know better than I, but it seemed to me that there was a great attempt made to that slide is off, but optimize the fare structure of Metro Access to bring down the cost. And there were a lot of things done to bring down the cost of Metro Access. Based on the difference in revenue recovery,
mm-hmm,
between railway, which I think you said was 80%, and bus, mm-hmm, ridership, which is 25%, does that translate into tension around increasing the bus fare to have more revenue recovery from riders?
I'm not sure what you mean by generate tension.
Well, tension, I mean, interest, let's put it that way, increasing the revenue recovery on the buses, because there's such a wide difference.
Sure. I think if you look at our peers, for example, Chicago, New York, Philly, they tend to have bus fares that are $2, $2.25, even $2.50. So I think maybe looking at that rather than specifically looking at the 25% fare box recovery, I think there's some potential there.
Thank you.
Sure.
Patrick?
Okay. Hi. Regarding the Metro Access fare structure, we met with Carol Kissel and Christian Kent about a week ago, and we proposed basically three actions. One of them is to look at the revenue that the fare calculator is generating to see what the effect is going to be, has been on the revenue and the distribution between the jurisdictions. The second is to look at the less than two times multiple for the trips that are generated by the ride guide, and the third option is to look at perhaps using the cheaper disability fare as the means for calculating the Metro Access fares. She's going to take a look at what the numbers do to the budget, and consider some of the proposals that we put forward. We gave her a write-up on that, so I'm sure that she's probably passed that along to you, and we, you know, had a chance maybe to look at what the proposals would be as far as the Metro Access fares. In general, we have looked at the fare calculator, and we do find, you know, initially that since we've had it working, that it has been giving us a cheaper fare, but we only have data from a couple of months or a couple, I think two quarters right now, to be able to look at what the data has given to us. So that's really not much to work with as far as the trend is concerned. But we appreciate the ability to talk with Carol and Christian for them to look at our ideas and to running them through, crunch the numbers, and let us know what they have.
Sure.
Thank you. James? Thank you. I'll just note we have about 5 minutes left for this agenda item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say two quick things. One of the things that, as you all deliberate these fare considerations, is that you don't raise fares arbitrarily and capriciously. I understand that you didn't raise it, you haven't raised fares since July 2012, and then now it's July 2014. Well, you know, maybe it's time for us to raise fares again, and let's raise them by 35 cents, you know, that sort of thing. Try to quantify why you're raising these fares, because people, real people, are affected by this. When you're looking at somebody who has to go all the way from New Carrollton, perhaps to Roslyn, you know, that's quite a way, as opposed to New Carrollton to Federal Center Southwest. That's a huge difference for a job. Second of all, and I want to back up what the chairman said about using us as a resource in terms of the riders, because Maryland, I'm the vice chair for Maryland for right now, is always going to cry poor. But the thing about Annapolis is that if you get into Annapolis and talk to people in Annapolis, maybe they can have some money somewhere. Also, even though I'm not a district resident, I'm at the John Wilson building all the time. And, you know, and D.C. is supposedly flush with cash. So, you know, try to use us as a resource in terms of, you know, getting the word out and getting the finance, you know, finances, whatever. That's all I got to say.
Thanks.
Yep.
Barbara? Ryan?
Yeah. The only thing that I want to stress is regarding your principles here.
Yes.
I think that a lot has to be done in order to allow customers to determine their fares easily. The one that you have as number two, mm-hmm. I think is one of the hardest ones when you deal with visitors and trying to explain the system to a visitor. And, oh, okay, and how much is that? Well, I have no idea what it just depends. What? And you try to explain all this, you know, and if it's rush hour, non-rush hour, nobody gets it. We get it because it has been, you know, founded on us on a daily basis. But for visitors, this doesn't apply. So that is something, and I think that a lot, we do get a lot of revenue out of our tourists.
Sure.
So we should do something to help them also try to determine.
I have volunteered on the 4th of July and the inauguration and the cherry blossoms, and I can certainly confirm. That it.
When you're considering the fare increases, please consider Blue Line people, that, you know, the frequency, that they don't get a rush hour frequency of trains. It's always 12 minutes regardless of the time, so it'll be a hard pill to swallow if you get a price increase on the Blue Line with the frequency of the trains all day long on that. And also, there was one other thing. Game day for the Redskins, when yes. they do a Monday night game, at the garages that service the stadium, the charge is $25, whether you go to the game or not. I have a coworker who obviously is leaving at 5 o'clock p.m., so she's clearly not going to the game, but yet she's still charged $25. And anyone who enters that Largo station on game day will have a $25 charge. Now, there is a policy that the next day you can call and have that charge removed, but, you know, how many people will even notice? People who have a high balance on the car probably don't even notice that they're being docked $25. So
that should not have happened. And in general, if you are parked in one of those two stations, either Morgan Boulevard or Largo, and you come from, I believe it's more like from Stadium Armory or further away, the system ought to recognize that you've done that and that you're a regular rider and only charge you the normal amount. So if that didn't happen, then that was a mistake. So.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you for coming in. I have a question related to number four principle, establish equitable fares and to comply with federal regulation. I want to know if your office has taken a look at a federal grant to cover some of the area, like covering the cost, what do you call it, capital cost. I don't know.
Okay.
Is there any way you can ask, or is there a rule you can get the federal grant to even out the revenue? I mean, is there a way you can take a look at it? I don't know the rules of a federal
right.
grant.
In general, for an agency of our size, we can't use federal grants for operating expenses. We generally only can use them for capital expenses. But I can certainly look a little further at what the options are for using federal funds related to Title VI compliance.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. We appreciate it. And you're welcome back at any time to talk about it. Again, this is the bread and butter of what we're interested in, I guarantee you. So, yes. Okay. We're right on schedule here. So with that, I will bring up Lynn Bowersox for a very daring back-to-back presentation. So we'll start with our Silver Line marketing plan, and then we'll go into the customer pledge discussion.
It's good to be with you all. Nice to see everybody. Thank you for asking me to come talk about two of my favorite subjects. I'll get the Silver Line plan up here. It's the lights lit up. Maybe I just need to bring it closer. Is that a little better?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so used to projecting normally that microphones are usually not needed. But thank you for inviting me to join you tonight. I'm really excited about the Silver Line Marketing and Communications Plan. It makes it feel much more real, much more imminent to all of us to be at this point in the preparations to operate the new service, and that's pretty exciting. Let me start by, if you go to the first slide, please, talking a little bit about what our research has told us about the Silver Line. This will be a little bit hard for folks to imagine. After many, many years of so many people planning and funding and lobbying for this great new line, when we interviewed and surveyed our riders, current Metro riders, we learned that when you look across the region, only 45 to 55% of them know about the Silver Line. Now, that means about half. And some people find that a little bit interesting in that it's been in the media, it's been talked about for years. It's hard to imagine that half the people haven't heard much about it. And I will tell you that that's probably a conservative number, because when you talk to non-Metro riders, the number of people who are aware gets a little smaller. And then it varies if you're in Virginia and you can see the construction going on and you live near the alignment, the awareness level is higher. If you're in the district or out in Prince George's County, your awareness level is lower. So the first thing I would say to you all is, as a marketing challenge, we take very seriously our need to raise awareness about the coming of the Silver Line, what it can do for you, why you might consider trying it, okay? When we talk to people in focus groups about the Silver Line, we educate them a little bit, we start to get a lot of interesting feedback about how they imagine that they want to use it. Obviously, commuting to work is an option. There's some direct quotes here from some of our customers. Leisure and entertainment, certainly people have heard of the Tysons Mall. The excitement about having a transit option that takes you directly to the mall gives you an alternative to Pentagon City there in Virginia. People are excited about that. Dulles Airport. Now, this one's interesting because even among those who are aware of the Silver Line, many are confused and believe that in the first phase, when it opens on day one, that it will serve Dulles Airport. And, of course, we know it will not until phase two is constructed. So there's some misinformation out there. And then one D.C. writer said it offers people a chance to get out of the city on weekend outings, especially young people and families. And so we're also called to remember that among the sort of urban folks who either are transit users by choice or transit dependent, that it expands the region for them. It expands the options they have for discretionary travel to see all kinds of things. So those folks say, in order to get me to use that, you need to tell me what's out there. Because you don't just ride to ride, you ride to go somewhere. So what's there? What would I find in Reston? Besides the mall, what's in Tysons? You know, explain to me what the destination options are. Okay, next slide. So when we looked at the possible messages that will persuade people to try the service, affordability was the bottom of the tier. It's really the last on the list for folks. And they say affordability is, you know, an interesting part of the equation when I decide how to travel, but for me, it's often not the most compelling part. Convenience is a little more compelling. When I think about the traffic, when I think about what I can do in a car, and you know, I thought about this the other night. I ride the Red Line, and the other night I was riding home. It was, you know, the end of the rush hour, and I watched a woman reading a wonderful children's book to her four-year-old, and I watched somebody else watching a movie on their laptop, and somebody else, actually several people, were listening with their earbuds to what I was sure was music, and somebody else was doing work on a legal brief. And as I looked around, I realized none of these people can do any of these activities in a car. And so when you think about the convenience that Metro offers you, that train travel offers generally, as people's commutes get longer and longer, and as you think about, you know, where you're going to work and where you're going to live and where you're going to go to school and where you want to access doctors and that kind of thing, your trip becomes a little bit longer because it can, and the options of what you do when you're traveling become much more interesting for folks. And so that convenience is important in their decisions. And then the traffic. So that's number one. For people who live along the new service area, the new alignment in Virginia, the traffic on 66, the traffic on the toll road, the traffic coming in both directions from Arlington, the traffic patterns that they see and that they experience and that they sit in every day can often turn a 20-minute drive into an hour-long drive. And so the reliability of train service that achieves travel times that's not subject to traffic congestion, accidents, sun glare, blizzards, ice, all of those things that tie us up in traffic every day, that's a very persuasive argument for people. So we're going to be trying to help people understand the advantages of train travel versus automobile travel. And even in some instances, the advantages over bus travel, as buses, while very transit friendly, are often subject to that same congestion in traffic. Next slide. And so when are we doing this outreach and this education and all this messaging? Well, we really see this happening in three phases. I mentioned awareness building, that's starting now. I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. And we call that pre-ORD. ORD stands for Operational Readiness Day. And that's the day basically when after the airport authority and its partners have finished the construction and have met all the requirements of the agreement with WMATA and have turned over basically the keys. And we're ready to begin the last phase of testing and preparation. That's called Operational Readiness Day. And excuse me, that's when we will have a sense of when the service will begin, because by agreement it's about 3 months from that period. Could be a little less. Okay. So when we get to Operational Readiness Day, we have to raise awareness and we need to be in a position where people are doing a lot of learning about the service, how to ride. Okay. And then post-operational readiness in that, run up to the launch of service, it's really the coming soon, now arriving, we're about to launch, and you'll see an even more intense effort in the campaign. Next slide. So where have we been? Well, this summer, we trademarked the SV mark. It's a very important feature of the new map, which we'll talk about a little bit. The SV disc is going to be the branded mark of the Silver Line, and it's protected and licensed by us, and that becomes important later down the road. The stakeholder coordination meetings have been really critical for us. We started these at the suggestion of Ms. Hudgens, the chair of our Customer Service and Operations Committee on the board. And basically, we have a conference call every 2 weeks with a lot of the stakeholders. In the summer, it was Virginia. Now we've opened it to the district in Maryland as well. And so we are on a call with the Fairfax County Police, the Department of Transportation, the planning groups, the County Supervisor's Office, Connector, bus service, the MWA folks, everybody who's been involved on that side of the river in terms of the project, and coordinating our efforts so that we can deliver all the information people need. What's been really useful to us about that is that these are the folks who really know what's going on locally at the ground, and they know what people need to know. And so they've been helpful in developing some of our outreach. School outreach is an example. So anytime you have a new rail system coming into a community, one of the things that's really important is to talk about safety in the community, particularly with schools. And we do have a number of schools. There are 5 public schools and about the same number of private schools that are within a half a mile of the new stations. And so we are working through Fairfax County and the Fairfax County Police Departments to do outreach through the principals in those schools, and we'll go in and do presentations and assemblies. We want children to understand how to go through stations safely, how to board and alight train safely, what safe behavior is on a train, what to do in the event of an emergency, that kind of thing. And then police and OEM drills, obviously there's training going on with local first responders so that in the event of an emergency, they are able to respond to the train. For many of these first responders, it's their first opportunity to become familiar with working on our train system. The Silver Line metro.com site. If you can go to the next slide and show that. So if you haven't been there, I'd invite you to check out the new silverlinemetro.com website. We decided as part of our stakeholder group that it was really important to give it its own destination page. For now, it will later migrate and be part of WMATA.com, but right now it stands out. This is really the basic site. We're going to be adding to it as we go along. The first job of this site is to teach you where the five stations are, because that's one of the things our customers don't yet know. Unless they live along the alignment, they say, okay, five new stations, I sort of know where Tyson's Mall is. Where's Reston? Where's Wheelie? I need to know that. So if you click on these, you go to, basically it's a Google Maps app. It will show you what's right around the station in terms of shopping and dining. And we're working with local employers to add as many of the large employers as we can to those maps so that people can identify travel to work options. It will grow as we go along. It already has. We've invited anybody who wants to partner with us to promote their local destination through this site. And we invite comments from the RAC. If you all are able to go on the site and tell us we've missed something or you'd like to see us add something, we're pleased to take those suggestions. It will have a how-to-ride guide that's downloadable very soon. We're working to develop that. And it will become basically the clearinghouse of information. As we get closer to time, we'll be updating it as we do our own site. It also has great links. If you want to go to the connector bus site, you're able to do it through here. If you want to go to Fairfax County to check out parking facilities, you can do it through this site. So it attempts to give people information that they might want to have. And what we heard from people was, you know, don't just tell us how to ride the train. Make sure you tell us, is there parking? If there's not, how do you access the station as a pedestrian? How do you access it via a bicycle? Is there a kiss and ride? You know, once I get there, how do I navigate it? You know, what's the frequency of travel? You know, everybody wants sort of a basic 101 on this, as if they've never ridden before, because they're not sure if it's exactly the same as these existing metro. And as you see the stations, it looks like it could be something a little different, right? It doesn't look like the underground stations that you might otherwise be familiar with in other parts of the system. Okay, next. So this will just give you a sense of where the planners thought we would be in terms of ridership and what we're shooting for. In the first year, not on the first day, but at the end of the first year, these were the projections. And they're a few years old, but folks think that they're generally pretty on target for what we would expect to see. And so as you can see, Reston is really going to see, we think, the biggest traffic in a given day, and Tyson's would be second. But when you take the four together that are sort of Tyson's-based, obviously that has a cumulative effect. Next. So I just thought it was interesting to see these stations one at a time. These pictures were taken and provided by the partnership in July, so you can really see them coming along, even flowers in bloom. That's McLean. Next. That's Tyson's Corner. And I don't know if you've been out there recently. Even a few months ago, it was all construction. It's really cleared up a lot. They're really reaching an interesting place in the construction of that station, and you can really see it taking shape, and you can see where you will land there on the, I think it's the Lord and Taylor and Macy side of the mall. If you're familiar with the mall, you just walk across and you basically are right there accessing the mall. So here's Greensboro Station, and I haven't been out there as recently, but you get a sense of the interior with the station manager kiosk there. And next, Spring Hill. And the last one, Wheelie Reston East. And I understand that's even made progress since that picture was taken. And so I'm sure that the project folks will want to have some early showings of that. Keep going. So just a reminder, and I heard mention made earlier of the rail service plan. It's just showing you here that the 6-minute peak period headway and the 12-minute midday headway is consistent with the service patterns you see throughout the system. Keep going. When we get to the operational readiness phase, you'll begin to see advertising throughout our system and through the media. The Connector Bus folks have a marketing plan that's synchronized with ours, and they'll begin to start reaching out, as we will, to be sharing with our bus customers how the routes will be realigned to connect with the new service. Employee education, hugely important. People think there's a handful of employees who are going to be working along the Silver Line, but our entire employee, our entire workforce, really needs to understand how this changes the system and what the options are so that they can direct folks accordingly. And then merchandise, always important, and people, you know, don't think much of T-shirts, but it really is a way sometimes that people can relate to the service and feel like they're part of it. And those are going to be going on sale in our merchandise store online pretty soon. Smart benefits, this is really key for us. As you know, there are both pre-tax and federally subsidized programs that allow employers to help employees pay for their commuter fare expense. And so one of the ways in which we talk about the Silver Line to all of the employers along the new alignment is to encourage them to participate in the Smart Benefits Program. And so it started this summer. It's getting more intense this fall, but there are literally hundreds of employers that we're visiting. We set up tables in their cafeterias. We put letters, articles in their newsletters. We're part of their new orientation for employee packages. There's each employer works with us differently, but we very much go in and talk to them and talk to their employees about how to make your commute more affordable and what these programs offer. Okay. So once we pass the operational readiness date, we'll begin to have online chats with the general manager. We stole a page out of the Post playbook on this. They invited us to participate in chats that they have regularly. We found them to be pretty useful with riders. We'll begin to do that more frequently later this fall. We'll be releasing videos. It's one of the ways that people learn these days through social media is to see quick videos, and so we can show them the behind the scenes of the Silver Line even before it's open for business. Value-added discounts. We have a lot of retailers, restaurants, and others along the Silver Line who want to offer our customers discounts to come out and try their business, or try, you know, make purchases. You'll see us in the Tyson's Corner Mall over the holidays this year giving out information about the Silver Line, and we'll also have opportunities for businesses to reach out to our customers to offer value-added discounts. The e-newsletter, essentially, today you sometimes get information from us because you're a Smart Trip card holder or because you've subscribed to Metro Alerts, and there's always an opt-in or opt-out solution for that, but we do like to give people information electronically as well. We do, as you know, the customer news page, which is a full page in the Express that we buy each month to make sure our customers have access to information, and that will become increasingly more news about the Silver Line. We'll be reaching out through, and the RAC had suggested that we do more festivals and community events about a year ago. We've really taken that to heart, not just in Virginia, although you'll see us, we were out at the Dulles Plane Pull. I didn't know they pulled planes in Dulles, but a lot of people go to that. And, you know, there's all kinds of arts festivals and community festivals in the district, in Maryland, as well as in Virginia, a lot of Oktoberfests coming up. So you'll see us, we partner with EMWA on this. Sometimes they go, sometimes we go, sometimes we both go, but we always have each other's materials at those tables to let folks know about what's coming. Civic and business groups. So, for example, I met recently with the Tyson's Partnership, which is a collection of businesses in the Tyson's area who wanted to know more about the Silver Line and how they could help us get the word out. And so through those organizations, we also do a lot of education and information sharing. I already mentioned the in-system ads. So we'll be using our own inventory, our own real estate in the system, and we know from our customers, whether it's about operations or anything else, that the place they most learn about Metro is on the system still, through those kiosk screens and the platform dioramas and through our posters and through people handing them information. And so you'll see what I call our silver squads, who will be out there over the next few months in stations all around the system handing out information about the Silver Line. Direct mail. really important tool for us because these days you can, the buzzword is geo-target, but you can actually take people by zip code and send them information that you want them to have. And so if people live around a particular station, you can send them information that's tailored for them. You'll see us doing direct mail to people's homes. The station tour, we talked to some of our stakeholders, some of our partners about this, and really leaning towards doing an open house of the station to invite riders in, to show them how to use fare machines, how to navigate the stations before the inauguration so that the community really has an opportunity to come in and learn and embrace the stations. And we're going to be putting those events together. And then the social media contest, we'd love when we get to inauguration day for the first train ride to have riders be able to participate in that first train. So we'll do some kind of contest online that everybody can, you know, participate in and select some number of riders to join us. Next slide. And so you've all seen the new map, I assume, by now, and this is such an important tool for us. As you know, it's not only iconic for Metro, but for the region, and it's the way that our customers tell us they learn the system. And so having this new map with the new stations indicated and the Silver Line running the whole way through the system out to Largo is really critical. It's a real challenge to get this out on the system for folks just in time, because you don't want to confuse visitors who might try to take a train that's not there yet. So these things come at the very last minute onto the system. But in the meantime, we do use it as an education tool, and it is going to be available for sale, and you will see it on merchandise. And we definitely appreciate the fact that the media covers the new system map, because that's really an important way for customers to learn about it. And so tonight I brought you just a small gift token. We do have new glass wipes in the new map that I'd like to share, and I find these to be one of the greatest things. They are terrific if you wear eyeglasses. They're also great if you have a smartphone for keeping it fingerprint-free, and you always have the map handy if you keep this in your bag or in your pocket, and this is the new one. So this isn't even available for sale yet. We just wanted to share it with y'all, and I have a few more if you need some. With that, let me conclude my briefing and answer any questions that you might have.
Thanks. Actually, since we've got a really tight schedule, we don't really have that much time for questions. I know that people probably have a lot of questions. I think let's direct those to John for the time being, so we can just go directly into our customer pledge. I know. I will ask. Let me just ask one on behalf of everybody here. This has been on my mind. What are you going to do for the people who? Yes, I know. I'm taking the chair's prerogative here. There's a lot of happy news about the Silver Line, the new customers are going to be served by that, but there are Blue Line customers who are going to lose as part of this. How are you going to address that as part of the plan?
Well, I want to say that Blue Line customers were in the original Silver Line plan told that they would get service every 14 minutes, and we were able over the last year to improve that delivery of service to 12 minutes, which was the best we could do given the infrastructure constraints that we have. I know that that's not great news for people. It's sort of less bad. I would also say that, you know, the service doesn't actually get any less when the Silver Line comes, in the sense that blue and yellow service remains in terms of alternatives that you have. You still have the alternative of the Yellow Line service. It requires a transfer, to be sure, but that service frequency is still available, so there's not a net loss. And obviously we're going to have to communicate with those folks about the change in frequency, but I don't think, frankly, that it's going to come as any surprise to any Blue Line rider. That information has been out there. We'll make sure that anybody who hasn't heard it hears it again. But I think that there's been a lot of attention to the fact that that change is happening. And ultimately, you know, in the Momentum strategic plan, there are some infrastructure improvements that are considered so that we can one day add more capacity, and that's really what's going to be required to make those changes possible to give Blue Line riders more frequent service.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. So now maybe we can go into the customer pledge portion.
Sure. So with respect to the customer pledge, first let me recognize the RAC for its leadership in bringing this idea forward. I think it's a good one. I think that it's a particularly good time to affirm our commitment to our riders as we have a new board strategic plan, Momentum, which I just mentioned, which sets out strategic goals and vision of delivering improved service over time. And so this fits nicely with where the board is, and I think, I don't want to speak on their behalf, but I think they will welcome the RAC's final recommendation on this. We too like the idea of stating that we value the customers, and so when we understood that the RAC was preparing a draft pledge, we engaged some focus groups with some customers in August, August 26th and 29th, and we had four groups that included rail and bus and riders and some rail and bus riders, people who take two modes. Of course, it was a mix of demographic and geographic folks from around the region, a very diverse group of people from every socioeconomic community. What we learned from those focus groups was that customers are not really as in tune to this as some of us are. I would say that their response was not as enthusiastic, maybe, as ours. Some of the quotes that we got from customers were, rail customers said, aren't they already providing this? And some of the bus and rail riders said, go ahead and put the goals up on the walls, just don't spend too much time thinking about it. And some of the infrequent riders said, this is probably really more for Metro employees than for customers. They should be reminded. When we asked customers if we did do this, what they thought we should speak to, what were the top issues that we ought to talk about in our customer pledge, safety, security, and customer service certainly were at the top of the list. And folks said, they offered safe, service-oriented, simple, and smart. Getting you there fast, safely, and securely. Get riders to their destinations in a timely, safe, and affordable manner. Reliable and dependent service on a system that is properly maintained, good coverage during all hours. Those are some of the quotes that are sort of representative of where people were with respect to the values themes that resonated with them. I would also say, and this is probably consistent with all of the communications that we talk to customers about these days, is that their message to us was, whatever it is, keep it short. And we find that with our customers, folks in this region in particular have a lot of messages every day that come at them through a variety of channels. And their attention to any one of those, there's a lot of competition for that. So they were clear that we should be short and concise. And when we showed them sample statements from other transit properties and from other organizations, non-transit organizations, and said, tell us what you like or don't like about these, consistently they picked the shortest statements, irrespective of the content, okay? And they basically, some of the quotes were, don't make it too long, stuff about times, maintenance is too much stuff I don't care about. Another customer said, I like the shorter versions. If this is Metro's promise, I'm not going to spend more than 1 minute reading it. Another customer said it shouldn't be more than one sentence. Okay? So just so you know, when they mean short, they mean really short. And so we took that feedback that we received, and we considered it, and then we took the RAC's draft pledge. And what we tried to do was to put together an option that incorporated the RAC's key themes and values in your one page, and then make it short in response to what we heard from the customers in the focus groups. And we added a couple of ideas, and so I just wanted to review that with you today. And again, if the chair says there's not time, there's plenty of time on this. You all can send us via email your thoughts and comments on this. I don't anticipate testing it again with riders or sharing it with the board committee for another month or two, so we have a little time to work in it. But if you see here, we said Metro values customers with the safety and security of our passengers as our first priority. Metro is committed to providing quality transit service delivered on clean buses, trains, and in stations because cleanliness was something our customers did talk about. And with courteous customer care, Metro further strives to meet customers' expectations with reliable service and timely information, especially during service disruptions. To be responsive, Metro is dedicated to incorporating the customer's voice in our decision making. So again, I want to give you credit. We looked at your bold statements in each of your thematic categories and tried to weave that together into a condensed statement that we thought met the customer's test of brevity. To offer an option. And so that's where we've ended up so far. My next steps on this are to get your comments, to get the accessibility committee's comments, where I'll be next week with Mr. Sheehan and others, and try to get their input, go back to the customers, maybe test one more time another iteration of this, before presenting it to the board's Customer Service and Operations Committee, where Ms. Hudgens has asked me to bring it forward. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much. Sure. And thank you also for sort of jumping on this bandwagon, as it were, and offering some more feedback to us, because I think we've had a lot of feedback among ourselves and with, riders, people that we know, but it's always good to have, Metro's feedback as well. So we do have about maybe 10, 15 minutes or so now. So maybe I'll just open it up for comments both on this and also on the previous one, since we do have a little more extra time that I didn't think we were going to have. So, Fred?
So I'm actually a little confused. So maybe I don't understand what we're doing here. It's possible. It would seem to me that the idea of a pledge, I don't understand why you wouldn't go test it with Metro employees, Metro management, and see if it resounds with them, because the whole idea of the pledge is that this is something that's going to drive how they do their work. And I don't really get why shortness, I can understand why customers would want it short, but it's really not aimed at the customer as much as it's aimed at a behavior you're trying to generate in the employees towards the customer.
So this statement that I prepared and shared with you, I have vetted through the heads of the operating departments at Metro, Rail, Bus, and Metro Access. All have seen this and have and think it's a good statement.
But I'm just not sure that's like the test. That's all.
Okay.
Marianne?
Sort of wondering what Metro then would do with this. This by itself is one piece of paper. What are the thoughts of how to use this and make it alive, to be able to show employees and customers that in fact how this is being met?
Sure. So last month at the board meeting, the general manager presented his business plan. And in the course of presenting the business plan, which is still available online if you care to review it, and there's actually a video of the presentation, he talked about using the safety culture change model at Metro as a foundation for a customer service culture change at Metro. And he outlined some steps that we're going to take in the business plan, actions that we have system-wide. Never before has WMATA undertaken a system-wide intermodal customer service campaign to train and equip its employees with common definitions, common standards, common policy, common compliance, accountability around customer care issues. So that is part of his business plan for the coming year. This value statement would be used in that context. So while I can't tell you today, it will appear on this thing and it will go to this place, it will be incorporated in the new standards and policies that are produced to be part of this customer care program.
Okay, that's fair. Carol?
I want to go back to the silver line. Two comments. The sneak preview tours, I think you should include those schools that you mentioned earlier, because you're probably going to deal with a population of kids, my grandkids among them, who are used to being ferried from place to place by car, who will all of a sudden have the opportunity to, you know, ride public transit. So I would definitely have school-based tours.
That's a terrific idea. And can you give me the name of your grandchildren's school? I want to make sure they're incorporated.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And you're right. We've been talking to some great area destinations, like our friends at the National Zoo, mm-hmm. and they imagine school groups and family groups and mm-hmm. Communities of faith groups who used to take buses or cars or vans to come to the zoo, and they would love for them to take the train. So we're going to be doing some partnerships that are really around kids and families, and I look forward to that. I think it's a great way for us to get people to use the line. And I want to make sure we include your school.
Okay, I'll do that. Okay. And the second question, I know it's not in your bailiwick, but I want to put it on the floor. How will these new stations be staffed? In other words, a lot of times when you have a rollout, you staff with the best and brightest, okay? How will these stations be staffed? And as I said, that's not even a question I expect you to answer, and I don't think it's in your bailiwick. I guess it's more in Carol Kissel's, but I think that's an important consideration.
Right, so...
If you have anything, if there are any options that you have.
I'll ask Rob what his plan is and get back through the chair to you about that. What I can tell you is that when we initially launch the service, we'll have a lot of extra staff on hand in the first days and weeks. To make sure that folks have a great experience on their first time out, and that, you know, if they need help using the fare vendors, there's somebody there to explain it. If they don't understand the fare tables and that kind of thing, or if they're looking for assistance, we're going to have that there for them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, yeah, go ahead.
I also would like to comment on the Silver Line marketing plan. I know that there is an interest in making all of the users of the system aware of it because of the opportunities, but I think the people most obviously would be interested and impacted are the blue and orange line people, because that's where the ridership, that's where the core is, which is 2 out of 5 lines, which is 40% of the lines, and so your 45% awareness sounded great to me. I don't know if it's spread out, but I mean, I think it's not as bad a news as it could be. I mean, I think that's pretty decent.
No, I agree with you. I don't see it as bad. I see it as a starting point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just the point is that I'm making is that no matter how much we all know about it, you can't assume that people know things.
Yeah.
And you have to work from that assumption and not take anything for granted. And I also think it's really important for us, and the board reminded me of this last month, this is a regional system. Any new addition to it expands the whole region. And so if you want to get a job at the hospital near Largo Town Center, you can do that even if you live in Reston. And if you live in the district and you want to get a job at Tyson's, you can do that by virtue of having this train access. So we really are trying to think globally from the regional perspective about all the options for travel, and not while Virginia is certainly first among equals on this one, probably in terms of ridership, not leave anybody out of that out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. So I know that the riders, especially because of the timing, this is going to be, we think, in the winter sometime.
I plan to wear a coat.
Early 2014, and we heard earlier that there are going to be announcements in probably the spring of 2014 about fare increases. Even there are always going to be concerns of riders about expenses, and especially if there's fare increases. And so at least some of the feedback I heard back when Rush Plus went in, you know, the riders are very sensitive to seeing money spent. And I think whereas it's wonderful and good to get the word out, riders probably don't like to see things. Okay, you don't have gold-plated signs, but, you know, that's the kind of thing that if it looks fancy and expensive, mm-hmm. that's like, why not put the money on my fares, or put the money on maintenance, and why on fancy marketing materials? I that's kind of feedback I think you have to kind of take into account, that you can spend money, but if it looks like you're spending a lot of money because you have lots of money to spare, that's something that doesn't go over very well, especially the Blue Line people, because as you heard, you know, there's still a chip on everybody's shoulder about Blue Line service. because we didn't hear the 14. We only heard the 12.
I do take your point, and I will tell you that, you know, we are looking for business partners in this to make sure that we economize as much as we can. And, for example, I look forward to having a commemorative smart trip card for the opening of the Silver Line, but I'm also actively seeking a sponsor for that card. Mm-hmm. So there are opportunities like that to have public-private partnership that economize what we do.
Yeah. One of the things I was surprised about is that I made the assumption that the line was being developed because there was such an unmet demand, you know, that existed out there. And so hearing then that we need to really educate the people that this is going to be available and they have to be sold to do it, it's not something that just logically followed to me. I figured it was more the other way, that this huge demand and they're waiting there just to be able to ride it.
Yeah, I don't think it's either or.
Yeah, it's something in between, yeah. But I do think that with, you know, money is never unlimited, that your likelihood of the marketing addressing it to the people along the orange and the blue compared to trying to find a green or a yellow or a red person that's really going to want to, you know, find a reason to go on the Silver Line is probably money better spent on the people that are the likely candidates. And I imagine you are doing that, but I think that's a logical approach anyway. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And sure,
okay.
Yes,
sorry. First on the Silver Line, I work in two safety clinics in inner city of Washington, D.C., and I pass these things past my patients. And the first thing I told them about was the Silver Line and all the activities were happening. And the 20 or so people I spoke to, what happens is when you open up anything new, really everyone should benefit. And they say, well, I've been riding the blue line or the red line. So you can also use that opportunity to refresh the feeder lines and the people riding the other lines with a free balloon or something promoting your Silver Line, which I don't really see here. And that was the main thing I get. And also, you can use that opportunity when you open a new line to reinforce, you know, metro safety rules. Like you said, you're going to go to school and do that teaching and all of that. But, you know, spread it around. Let the other folks enjoy on this. Plus, you'll bring more ridership that way and the benefits that they can get to Tyson Corner, even if you don't build your ridership base from the people who actually live in that Virginia area. Secondly, on the the metro pledge, and I deal with some funny folks sometimes. And so the feedback I got on this is that we don't want folks to look at this as being a joke. Right now it says joke. A lot of folks didn't like the word pledge, and it says it should be Metro's commitment. I don't like the word pledge either, but if we just titled it our commitment, and I agree with you that it really should be shortened. And the 20 people, again, independent, no scientific base, proof of this on my survey of folks I deal with in that part of the city. You know, they simplified even more, and they tell me the four things. Get me there safely, get me there on time, make sure no bodily harm comes to me, and give me an avenue, a vehicle for my voice to be heard. Simple as that. And that should be Metro's commitment to everybody. That's it. Thank you.
That works for me. I mean, our work is done.
Right? Yeah, okay. I'm back.
Anyone? Yeah, Karen, go ahead. Oh. Don't worry about it. There you go.
Thanks so much. I have a couple of quick questions. You mentioned the stakeholder coordination meetings. Do you guys still have that?
Yes, it'll be ongoing right through the launch. It may be needed after the launch.
Okay.
If it is, we'll continue.
Is that open to the public?
It's not, because it's really just a working meeting. We try to do it as quick as we can on conference mm-hmm. calls. And what's happening is that we're all sort of sharing our timetables for doing different activities to make sure that we're aligning and syncing up. And we'll say things like, you know, with respect to the school outreach, you know, mm-hmm. the police in Fairfax and the Fairfax County folks already know who all those principals are and the points of contact for school assemblies. And so, you know, they'll offer to help us not have to develop those lists all over again, and they'll offer to do that outreach for us. So it's really a very logistics-based coordination meeting.
Okay. Are there any representatives from Prince George's County?
We have invited Prince George's County to participate. I cannot tell you that I've heard any yet on the conference call, but they have been invited.
Okay. And my other question was, do you have hard dates for the rollout of your outreach plans? You mentioned all these great things that you're going to be doing in the near future, but
We're putting calendars against them
okay.
now. I mean, obviously, because the start of service hasn't been announced yet, because we haven't gotten to operational readiness. There's a little bit of flux in the calendar, but some of the things that are being developed, like advertising and that kind of thing, it's happening now, and we're putting dates against them.
Mm-hmm. And since Largo is a major hub for the Silver Line, I was wondering how much outreach was going to happen in the Prince George's County
area.
You will see
a lot in the surrounds of Largo, because we really do consider that, it's a terminus for the line, so it's pretty significant.
Absolutely.
And we think that's an important place for us to do the education information.
Okay, and I just wanted to comment that I do ride the Blue Line from Largo every day to and from work. So the 14 minutes and the 12 minutes was very surprising to me. I would have never known about it if I wasn't a RAC member. So I definitely think there needs to be more communication and outreach in the Prince George's County area. I also want to add that I have a friend that is a train operator, and he operates a train on the Blue Line from Largo as well. And he was stunned that Largo is going to be a major hub for the Silver Line. He actually argued me down that that wasn't the case. So, again, I think there needs to be more communication to your employees as well as the stakeholders.
Absolutely.
In Prince George's County.
Especially bus drivers.
Exactly. I just think that on the Prince George's County side, that people just aren't very cognizant of what's happening on the Silver Line. And it appears to be, to me, that Metro is really focused on Virginia, and you may be leaving out the Maryland side.
Well, you make a good point. And if you would take out your wipe for a minute, I just want to make one point. Where you come from in Largo on the Blue Line, that's not where you're going to see the 12 minutes. It's down here in the Virginia line, where it extends down to Franconia, Springfield. That's where they feel that impact, not where you are.
Franconia and Van Dorn. That's
about it. Sure, just a clarification, yeah.
All right, thanks. Any public comment there? Just want to make sure. So if you're here, does that mean that the shutdown is going to last like at least 3-4 more days? Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anyway, thank you very much again for coming in, and we really appreciate it. And feel free to come back and share anything else with us.
Great.
And if there are any further questions that are formulated later, please feel free to send them to John or myself, and we'll forward those on. Okay, so with that, we're going to move to discussion of our own draft of the pledge. If you look on page 53, which is agenda item 8 there, right, just right after the PowerPoint slides, you'll see the clean version of the pledge. So basically, let me just give you a quick update of what happened between the last meeting and this one. We had a meeting, when was it? Last week? Last Monday, I guess?
Yeah.
Seems like a while ago, but yes. Yes, yes. Last Monday, where a group of us got together, dealt with some of the items that we bracketed last time, and tried to come up with basically a final document that we could approve tonight. So if you look on page 54, you will see sort of some of the work that went on behind that, some of the additional tweaks that were made. I sent around an email, I guess it was on Monday or Tuesday, sort of showing the work behind all of that. So what I'd like to do as sort of previewed in that email is we're going to have three votes tonight. The first vote, we're going to vote on the what I'm calling the chapeau statement, which is that first little thing that that Mary Ann came up with. The second thing we're going to do is we're going to vote on the sort of stylistic changes that I added, in other words, sort of the tense changes, a couple little word tweaks here and there that were based on feedback that I received from several RAC members. And then the third would be to vote to approve the whole thing and send it to the board. Any discussion on the process before we move forward? That's a good question. Yeah, so this is WMATA's pledge, their version of the pledge. And I think the expectation from here.
Yeah, I was talking about that.
No.
Lynn mentioned our pledge, so she had an earlier version.
Yes, she had an earlier version. That is correct. But it also deserves talking about the thing that I thought you were talking about, which is what will happen from here. I think the idea from now is that we will send our version to the board. WMATA staff will send their version to the board, and then the board will take the two and decide what to do with it. So I don't want anybody to be too concerned about what WMATA staff will do versus what we will do. Ultimately, the board is going to be the one, you know, the body that decides what this pledge will be. So, yes, exactly, exactly. All right, so let's start off with a discussion on the chapeau statement, that first Metro provides a safe, reliable, accessible, and courteous transit experience to all customers through the following. Is there any discussion on this?
I have.
Yes, Barbara.
Because we're talking about Metro's commitment, and I know Metro employees, you know, it's a great pledge to have Metro employees be courteous, but so much of the courtesy of a transit experience has to do with riders, not Metro. That word didn't seem to fit as well as the others to me. Safe, reliable, and accessible transit experience. But that's just my personal opinion.
Right.
If I were writing it, I wouldn't have the word in there.
All right. A meter system.
No,
just kidding.
Frank?
To me, this added statement seems a little redundant, since it really is a compilation of the main themes of the rest of it. So I would like to know why it was felt it was needed.
Mary Ann, you want to answer that?
When we looked at what other agencies did, the ones that were easier to read had an overall statement and then details. And it fits a little bit with the don't say too much and then go into detail. So that was the idea, is to, hey, if you only read one line, this is it. If you want to know detail and perhaps how then are we going to measure ourselves, you look at the detail.
Okay, Lorraine?
After seeing Metro's draft, it gave me the idea that maybe this should be the head, should be at the head, and then we go into detail afterwards.
Mm-hmm. That would
something
add about
that this is something, you know, a little bit more, this.
That would add about a third, yeah, of a third more,
well,
text.
Yeah, no, but this is the executive summary. You know what I mean? And then if you're more interested, then you go into the rest of it, which is basically why it was created in the beginning, to be like a summary of everything else.
Sure. Yes.
Okay, I think the feedback that we've heard tonight is basically that people want it short and simple. So I don't think at this point we should add anything else to this. If anything, we should take stuff out. So that's really how it should be. And so that's been my feeling all along, so I'm just going to say that from now.
I was just thinking of replacing. That was...
Yeah, no, I think that would be, in my opinion, way too much. I would stop reading after the first sentence.
And, you know, like most organizations in mind, you want something to define you. Revenue's pledge. I don't know what Metro's mission statement is, but they should have one somewhere along the line. And that's what should be like hanging in employees, you know, breakout rooms or whatever. I think this should be really geared more to, you know, employees, because they should look at this every day. And that's their commitment to getting us to where we need to be safely and unharmed. So, and I don't buy pledges, so I have my own bias, as you probably can hear. But, simple mission statement, you know, two sentences, should be able to bring in what, you know, what Metro values are. And it's really safety, reliability, and, you know, no accident,
okay,
whatever.
Are you having that because you want to say again? Okay, go ahead.
I know that statement? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do they have a mission statement, Metro?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Can
we read?
We can find that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I only attended one of the focus groups, and my recollection is more the Goldilocks syndrome, that it was short was too short, long was too long, and the middle one was the best. But how long was the middle one, I don't know. But one of the concepts that when we were originally working on this, we even talked about having short and a long version. Like, these are the bullets, but if somebody wants to see the full picture, you know, like you have maybe some posters with, what does it mean when we say they provide the highest level of customer service, or what does it mean by accessible? And this is what it means. I mean, so that is an approach to hit both short and what does the short mean? What's the long version of the short? Just as an idea that you can have in your communication, you could have two lengths.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, to answer Etta's question, this has been through many, many, many iterations, which means exactly nothing. But one of the early iterations that we did talk about at a combined standing committee meeting was tying this to Metro's strategic plan, which, of course, has its mission. And if you go up on the website, you can see it. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, that was, I guess, by the majority of the people who were present, or somehow that was sort of abandoned. Yeah, that was abandoned. But we did start out at one point, or at some point, the idea of tying it to the strategic plan, the mission, and the four goals. And somewhere along the line, that was lost. But, I, you know, having gone through probably, I think I've been at every meeting or sub-meeting or whatever about this, I think we ought to have an overarching one-sentence statement that kind of summarizes what we're saying. Like, if you didn't know anything else, I had a little bit different one. I said that we should provide the Metro should provide a courteous transit experience to all of its customers from the beginning to the end of each trip. But I think that could be wordsmith. I don't want to get into pride of authorship. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking in favor of an overarching statement that incorporates what's below, what goes below. And with all due respect to Lynn, whom I really, you know, who represents the staff who worked on this, having not attended the focus groups, I'm in favor of having something a bit more concrete. And I'd rather, you know, since it's going to be ultimately up to the Metro Board to decide which, to kind of wrestle this all to the ground, so to speak, I'm for putting more detail in it rather than less, having a bit longer and more.
So not to so much explain it to ridership, because we were saying we'd be going through this and say, well, this will, you know, explain up above, and then it starts to seem like a legal document. And I didn't want that feel either, but I like the overarching message, and I just think, and granted, I wasn't at those meetings, end product, you know, so I know much work and thought, and sometimes the idea will come up in the meeting, which obviously made sense at the time, but, you know, as it goes through.
And what I guess I'm really saying is, I think there are 15 ways we could have done this. We could have gone tied to momentum, which is something I was very wed to. I mean, Minister Karen Lynch suggested it. We ended up with this. I'm okay with this method, but I do think we ought to have more rather than less.
Okay.
Fred?
Yeah, I mean, I think, say, understanding that this is not going to get chiseled into stone anytime soon. This is not something that I think that the group and the people that worked on this have done a really nice job. I think this captures all the thoughts that I think everybody has. Everybody here, if we asked to write it, we could come up with different words, but I think people who worked hard on this did a really great job.
Thank you. That sounds to me like you're calling the question on that first statement.
Yeah, that's actually what I was doing, yes.
I'm glad you did that. Okay, so let's vote real quick on whether to close debate on this. All in favor of closing debate on this? Oh, is there a second? Thank you for that. Seconded by Lorraine, thank you. Yeah, so we're voting to close debate on the chapeau sentence, and then we'll have a vote on that sentence. All in favor of closing debate, say aye.
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 All opposed? No abstentions? All right, that passes. Now we're going to vote on that chapeau sentence as written. All in favor, say aye. We don't have to because we already closed debate on that.
So there can be no amendments. We never call for amendments to this statement.
Once debate is closed, debate is closed.
But I don't think you were crystal clear on the process, but okay. I wanted to take out through the following and just leave it at finish the sentence to all customers. Yeah, we never put it on the floor.
I did put it on the floor when I described how we were going to go through that process.
I would like, well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to amend this statement is to end with the with customers and not say through the following. That's my amendment.
I'm going to suggest that you add that amendment in our stylistic vote in the next vote, if that's okay.
Okay. Sorry.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, having closed debate on that first chapeau sentence, we're now going to vote on whether to approve that chapeau sentence. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Two opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention. All right, so that's approved.
I'm sorry, who was the
two abstentions.
Candace and Sherry.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry. Two
hands go up when people said abstentions.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Are you
abstaining or
abstaining? All right. Next, we're going to talk about the stylistic. Again, I made a couple just sort of blanket changes. I put it in the present tense rather than the future tense. I changed it to, what is it, customers, because we had sort of customers, riders, and passengers all throughout, so I just sort of made some consistency changes there. So I'm going to open that up for any discussion. Yes?
So are you moving that? Are you moving those then?
Then, yes, I guess I am.
Okay.
Second.
All right. Candace? Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, no, Marianne, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we do. And we always sit together. I have three areas where I would suggest some minor modification of words, and people can either accept it or not. I have three, I guess they're three separate, make them separate amendments or something.
All right.
Let me at least say what the rewording would be. In the second full statement, the last sentence where it has for any issue that cannot be immediately resolved, Metro will provide, I'd then say, an acknowledgement of your concern.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm confused. I thought we were only talking about safety as our number one concern.
No, I just said that I had
we're talking about stylistic changes through the whole document.
Oh. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Go ahead.
And then the rest of the sentence. So
it, could you repeat? I'm sorry, my brain wasn't working.
It's the second full statement, starting with Metro will provide. The last sentence that starts for any issue.
Oh, okay.
That cannot be immediately resolved. Metro will provide an acknowledgement of your concern and take out in place of response.
Okay.
Down on the second from the bottom, on customer security, the first sentence starting Metro Transit Police suggests take out the word constantly and say Metro Transit Police works with law enforcement officials across jurisdictions, da 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 da. Then if you are a victim of crime on Metro property or within the system, da 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 da.
Sorry, say that last one again.
The sure. Start of the second sentence is if you are a victim of crime on Metro property or within the Metro system.
Okay.
Take out while in. Then on the last
sorry,
paragraph.
So it would read if you're a victim of crime on Metro property or while in the Metro system?
Within or while in, whichever.
On Metro.
Or
within the Metro system.
Or within the Metro system.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to add the word property and within.
On Metro property or within.
Okay, thank you.
Then the last paragraph, I'd suggest moving the last sentence about Metro will actively, I'm sorry, Metro actively engages communities up to the, I'll call it paragraph, where Metro offers an accessible environment for all as a a second follow-on sentence.
Sorry, say that one more time. I didn't follow you.
That Metro actively engages communities.
Yeah.
I would move that, suggest moving that sentence up to be the last sentence in the paragraph that starts Metro offers an accessible environment.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Can I just make a quick suggestion that you maybe offer that as a single amendment?
Okay, I offer that as a single amendment.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded. Okay. Any further debate on this amendment? Frank?
I don't know if I could do this, but I would prefer that they be three separate amendments. You know, because you might like one or two and
right.
not like...
All right. So let's start with number one. And Carol, is it okay if you second all three of those? Is that in triplicate there? All right. So we'll start with the first one then, which is in changing it from response to acknowledgement of your concern. I can read my own writing. Any debate on that amendment? Anyone want to call the question? If there's
I
debate.
Wanted to.
Oh no, go ahead.
I think that acknowledgement is a good change. I think of your concern just kind of repeats that you for any issue you've. You know, I think acknowledgement says it without of you. I don't think you need to spell out with your concern because it says for any issue. So.
I'm willing to modify it to just say an acknowledgement within one business day.
Yeah.
Yes.
And take out response.
Yeah.
So it will read. Can you read that sentence one more time?
Well, it's right.
For any issue that's not being able to resolve, Metro provides an acknowledgement. Customers updated until their issue is addressed.
Do you think? I have a question. Do you think people?
Go ahead.
That person did not have the floor.
Do you think variety of media implies telephone and print? We're not just talking about twits, you know, tweets. Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Candace?
I have a quick question. I guess I'm trying to figure out the difference between a response and an acknowledgement.
We discussed this at length in the working group.
Okay.
The difference between the sort of two factions there is some people are okay with, we've received your query and we'll deal with it in due course. Other people want something more specific than that. I'm of the camp of, I want something more specific than that. I'm not satisfied with acknowledgement personally, but others are okay with receiving the automated response that says we've received your query.
This is going back to the presentation that they made to us. Sometimes some of the issues that they bring up to the customer service people are something that the customer service cannot respond to immediately because they're technical. So they have to refer to some other person within Metro,
right,
to the, another division, and that's where the acknowledgement comes to effect. We're consulting, or we will get back to you within 2 or 3 days or whatever, because they actually do give a deadline to the person that they referred this issue to. But we have to acknowledge and tell them, look, we haven't forgotten about your initial coming to us, but you will get the technical response.
Well, yeah, as you're saying, you're basically interchanging the words. They're interchangeable. So to me, whether you use response or acknowledgement, it doesn't really
matter. I see what you're saying. Metro, will we provide a response?
I was kind of hoping to avoid another markup session, to be honest, tonight. And we're already at the end of the allotted time for this. So if we can, I'd just like to maybe hurry it up just a little bit. I'm just saying. So that being said, any further discussion on this amendment? There you go. Okay. Any second? On that. Seconded. All right. All in favor of closing debate on this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much. Any abstentions? Sorry. Okay. We'll now vote on changing that word from response to acknowledgement. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Candace, Frank, me. Any abstentions? Fred. All right. Fred is abstaining. All right. That motion passes. We'll now move to the second amendment, that being in the customer security point. Nixing the word constantly and replacing while in the second sentence with, oh, sorry. And so it would read, Metro Transit Police, works with law enforcement officers across jurisdictions to prevent crime throughout the metro system. Say what?
Officials or officers.
Yes.
Officials. Fine. If you are a victim of crime on metro property or within the metro system, Metro Transit Police will work to provide timely and effective resolution. Any debate on this amendment? Question has been moved. Any seconded? Thank you.
Move. Is there a second to this one?
Yeah, I did. Second.
Thank
you. Yeah, she had seconded before, sorry. All right, so question moved by Fred, seconded by Frank. All in favor of closing debate on this amendment, please say aye. All opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. All right, we'll now move directly to a vote on this. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? James, Fred? Any abstentions? Candace? All right, that is also adopted. All right, we're going to move straight to amendment number three, which is moving the final line, Metro actively engages communities in response to their needs, into the accessible environment for all paragraph. Any discussion on this amendment?
I second.
Question's been moved. Any second on that? None? Any other debate then on this amendment?
I think it fits better in the last section. The Metro offers an accessible environment. E is about environment. And while it does talk about diversity and custom communities there, I think adding that sentence will confuse that section is about environment. And so I feel it fits better.
Barbara?
I think you could also debate that it belongs with customer service because it engages, you know, responds to the needs of customers. So I don't think anything's obvious on this one.
Okay.
Ben?
Yes.
Friendly, could we drop it if it's so amorphous? Does that mean if it could go anywhere, maybe it should go nowhere? Well, no, voting it down means that it stays.
So you move the question again?
Yeah.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor of closing debate on this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? One, Frank. Any abstentions?
Frank, you were opposed.
Okay, that passes. We're now going to go directly to a vote on this amendment. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No. Okay, I'm sorry.
Right.
All right.
Do what to move it?
The amendment is going to, it would move that last sentence, Metro actively engages communities in response to their needs, into the accessible environment for all. So we put it right here. All right, so just to clarify one more time, if you could raise your hand if you are for this amendment, for moving that statement.
Barbara, Carol, and
Patrick.
So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, Death. 5, 6.
Barbara, Carol, Marianne, Patrick, James,
and Deborah. Death. All opposed? Fred, Etta Sherry, Frank, any abstentions? Karen, Candace, Pat, Lorraine. What's our vote total on this one?
And what do you need? County, do you count
it's just, it's a majority. It's just a majority.
A majority of voters?
Yes. No, it's
six,
it's a plurality of voters.
Three opposed and either five or six or four or five abstentions. Remind me of staying Lorraine.
I think the vote fails because the extent, actually, according to Robert's rule, we're really not supposed to be recording abstentions. That's a, another point for another day.
we have a plurality, but not a majority, correct? Then I believe that passes, does it not? Yeah, that passes. That passes. All right. So that has passed. Okay. Any more debate on the stylistic questions? Yes.
Yes.
Are we going to work? Are the Metro Transit Police going to work or works?
That was
Metro
mine.
Metro is committed to passenger security.
That's I think we say the police are here. I don't think we say the police is here. I think it's...
So it's work, okay.
I think it's work, not
all
works.
Right.
Okay.
Can we disagree to that one by unanimous consent there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm
stylistic
not
change? Okay. All right.
Thank you.
So moved and adopted.
I've forgotten. What is it that you keep calling it?
The chapeau.
The hat statement?
Yeah.
Oh. Learn something new every day. Okay, I want to make a stylistic change and just say, Metro provides a safe, reliable, accessible, and courteous transit experience to all customers. Period. Just sort of have it a block, and then, without saying through the following.
The top.
Very top. Striking the last three words.
Right through the following. All right.
Second.
Any seconded? Seconded, okay. Any debate on this? All right, yes, you can. There's been a motion to close debate. Any seconds there? Seconded, all right. All in favor of closing debate, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right. So now we're gonna vote on that to strike those last three words from the chapeau. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right. Yes, all in favor, that one is unanimous, struck. Any other debate on the stylistic changes? Or other motions? Hint.
There was a... Earlier I heard someone suggest we change pledge to commitment. And
I think that's going to be ultimately up to the board, personally.
Okay, fine.
Well, this is our document. They will ultimately decide.
Well, I know, but...
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I could go for that.
So are you motioning there?
I like the idea, yeah. I move
so your
that we
so your motion
commitment.
Is Metro's commitment to customers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any seconded? Any debate on this amendment? Or anything else to say? A motion, perhaps.
Can I call the question?
Sure you can.
On my own?
Yep.
I moved to close debate. Or did you
all right.
Do that?
There's second. A motion to close debate. Seconded. All in favor of closing debate on this, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right. All in favor of changing pledge to commitment, please, let's raise our hands on this one. Please raise your hand in favor. Opposed? James, Karen, Frank? Abstentions? None? All right. It is now the Metro's commitment. Any other debate on the stylistic changes? Or other motions? Could someone please motion to close debate if there's nothing else to say?
What are we closing debate on?
Thank you. All right. Any...
Yeah, what are we closing debate on?
On any...
Debate.
Yes. On any of the stylistic changes and all that kind of stuff, the tenses and all that, that's
well,
also been changed.
Why don't we make... I think what we need, a new motion, we need to say, I move that we accept the Metro as pledge amended. To customers as amended. Yeah.
Okay.
Or Metro commitment to customers as amended.
All right. Then, all right. So we're moving on the whole pledge.
Right.
Any second there?
Commitment.
Yes, commitment, I'm sorry.
Commitment.
So, Mary Ann, you're seconding? Okay, thank you. Any debate? All right. No debate on that? All right. Yes, you do. You do. Okay. Any second there?
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Second, close debate.
Close debate.
I second.
Thank you. All right. All in favor of closing debate on this customer commitment? Say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay. We'll now move the final vote. Yes, this is it. This is it. The final vote right now. All in favor of the commitment.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
All right. All in favor of this as written, please say aye.
As amended.
Yes, as amended.
Yeah, we can talk.
Please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Thank you very much. Congratulations, everybody.
Now, what do you plan to do?
What do I plan to do? Good question. I am going to write a letter to the board talking a little bit about the process that we went through to get to this point, recommending that they take it up along with the staff pledge, offering any further assistance, feedback on pledge issues should they need it, and all of that sort of thing. All right? All right. All downhill from here. We've got a good 3 minutes. Bus hearings recap, we have those, some of those in the back of our packets. Does anybody else have any thoughts who attended the hearings before we move on? Seeing none. RAC recruitment, we have several vacancies at the moment. Maybe John, could you give us a quick update on where we stand there?
You in fact do, I'm going to come up to the mic.
Yep, that's a good idea.
Right now
there are six vacancies out of the 21 seats on the RAC, two from Montgomery County, two from the district, one at large, one from Arlington. It is our hope to appoint at least the district and Arlington folks in October. That would leave three vacancies and then five people who I emailed previously whose terms will end in December. We will be starting outreach, fingers crossed, this Friday to fill those positions and to fill the positions of people whose terms are expiring. So look for press releases, signs in rail stations, hopefully signs on buses, and additional information. If your term is expiring, I have emailed you to let you know.
Okay. Thank you very much. I just want to say also, I think we as RAC members have a role here in trying to spread the word on all of this, and I really hope that, you know, if you know good people who you'd like to have on the RAC with you, please get out there and recruit them, ask them to apply. Carol?
Okay. I'd just like to let everybody know that the leadership team had a very productive call with Loretta and John, kind of demystifying the whole recruitment process, so we could maybe talk offline about that. Number two, I want to rescind the motion that was approved at our last meeting, which requires a two-thirds majority. That's why I have Robert's rules here. At the last meeting, we recommended that three people be terminated for non-attendance. Since that time, two of the three people have resigned, thus, you know, making it, we don't have to send anything to the board, they've resigned. And the third person has reactivated her participation. So, I would like to move that we rescind that motion, which is incorporated in the September 4th minutes. Is there a second?
Okay. Yeah, is there a second?
Okay, and it needs a two-thirds majority.
Yeah, that does need a two-thirds majority. Yeah. Any debate on this before we move forward?
Mm-hmm. It's a motion to reconsider.
Right, it's a motion to reconsider, yes. Any debate? None? All right. Any motion to close debate?
Close debate.
Thank you. Any second on that? That has been a motion to close debate, seconded by Lorraine. All in favor of closing debate on this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that passes. So now we're going to go straight to a vote on this. It will require a two-thirds majority, as it's a reconsideration of something that we've already passed. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, that passes. Thank you, Carol. Upcoming meetings and announcements. I'll just start off that one by saying that we are definitely going to have this Maryland listening session by hook or by crook. It seems like the preponderance of the leadership team has said that we are going to delay that until November, just due to scheduling issues, and we want to have as much time as possible to get some of the word out on that. There's also been a bit of back and forth about the location, so we're going to try to get that done very quickly so people will have as much time as possible to get the word out on that. That's much of the discussion. So, but we're working on that within the Maryland delegation, and James is helping us work on that. Any other upcoming meetings or announcements? Barbara, I think you had something.
Well, I'd just like to clarify, when are the subcommittee meetings this coming month?
Okay, good question.
Do we have all three of them on, or what?
Karen, do you have any thoughts on when the operations and... Okay. All right.
Okay. So we will plan for 2nd plus 9 plus 16, 15th of October.
Okay. And the safety and security subcommittee?
No, since there had been this plan that there would be a listening session next week, which is the date.
Oh, right.
Nothing was done. So if we can miss that date in November, we could try to set up, because we have several things that we could do for November.
Okay.
But not for next week.
Okay.
And then just the finance. I don't even know.
Finance? I don't think there's...
No.
Until the budget is
okay.
Is produced.
So we have the one in 2 weeks. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Any other updates there? Open mic. Any other?
Oh.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but we got to do this. I move that I have reviewed the 3 minutes sets of minutes.
Oh, yes. Thank you for raising that.
I move that we adopt all three sets of minutes for the April minute, the April 3rd, August 7th, and the September 4th.
Okay.
And
normally we just do those by unanimous consent at the beginning of the meeting. So
I reviewed them and sent the corrections to John, and I have a few things.
Sure.
So if people will...
Are there any objections to approval of the minutes? Seeing none, they are approved. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. Any other open mic? Yes. That is a good question. These are goodies for us to hand out?
Correct. Okay. One of the things that we were going to talk about had we had an Operations and Communications Subcommittee meeting, Metro, as you all may know, received a grant from the federal government to make improvements it was a little under $2 million to make improvements at bus stops around the region. And so what we're trying to find out from our customers is what kind of improvements do they want to see. Since most of our bus stops are owned and controlled by the jurisdictions, and they have sort of programs in place that put shelters in through advertising contracts, so we're not looking at putting in shelters, but we're looking at other things that we can do with that $1.87 million to improve bus stops around the region. And what we're trying to do is reach out to people to tell them, or excuse me, have them tell us, excuse me, what it is that they want to see. And so the campaign is called Love Your Bus Stop. And the staff person for Love Your Bus Stop, in lieu of last week's meeting, asked that I hand these out to you, and you can pass these along to your friends and colleagues and maybe even people you don't like, so that they can turn around and tell Metro what is it that we want to see at our bus stops. And, you know, it could be that everybody wants to see a bench, and so, you know, we divide the $1.87 million by however much it costs to put in a bench, and you get X number of benches. It could be that people want to see the little schedule displays. You divide that, and if that's, you know, I'm not sure what the methodology is. I think you'll get a presentation on that a little bit down the pike. But, you know, if that's sort of the runaway choice, then you'll get the $1.87 million divided by the lower cost of the schedule displays, which will equal schedule displays at X number of stops around the region. So that's what this is. He asked that I hand this stuff out to you all.
So just a quick question on this, and you left out the question. My book I work with that says, what would you make you love your bus stop? And I have people tell you if I had one. So would that fall on the operational, I mean, only existing bus stops?
This is only existing bus stops.
Okay.
Fine. So.
Yes. I'm out.
Anything else for open mic tonight? All right. Hearing none, we are adjourned.